Right from day one of the Russia-Ukraine war, India has been at the center of almost every country's foreign policy, whether it is the Western countries or the Eastern and Middle Eastern countries. Recently, you must have seen in the news that diplomats, higher government officials, ministers of various countries are visiting India. In the last 1 month, top government representatives of most of the top countries in the world have visited India. On 31st March 2021, Russian Minister of Foreign Affairs Sergei Lavrov visited India. Why did he visit? I'll tell you in a while. On the same day, United Kingdom, United States has also sent their Foreign Secretary and Deputy National Security Advisor to India. Then, as you know, on 25th March 2022, the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi visited India. His visit was unofficial and nothing substantial came out of his visit. India was firm in its demand. The only thing India needs is for China to disengage from the eastern Ladakh region. On the other hand, China was trying to make a discussion that was away from its land-grabbing nature, whereas India brought China back to the core issue, and that made China a bit uncomfortable, and hence I say that nothing substantial came out of the Chinese foreign minister's visit to India. If you want, I'll make a separate video on this topic as well. Then on 22nd March, Greek foreign minister Nikos Dendias visited India. It was his first visit to India, so he was basically taking a comprehensive review of bilateral relationship between India and Greece. So you can call it a routine bilateral meeting wherein both the countries were discussing areas of mutual partnership. Then on 19th March, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida came to India. If you remember, he became the Prime Minister of Japan on October 4, 2021. That means it is his first official visit to India. Both sides expressed a desire to further strengthen special strategic and global partnership. Since both the countries are part of the Indo-Pacific region, so everything with respect to trade and many highway projects in India, especially in the northeastern states, are actually being built in partnership with Japan. One of the most prominent projects is the 20-kilometer long bridge over the Brahmaputra River between Assam and Meghalaya. And then since 2014, both the countries have achieved the target of 3.5 trillion Japanese yen in public and private investments in India, which includes several Japanese industrial townships in states like Rajasthan and Andhra Pradesh. Then Japan is the fifth largest source of FDI to India. Then many rail infrastructure projects are being made in India through Japanese assistance, like Mumbai-Ahmedabad high-speed rail, and many freight corridors and metro projects. And then both the countries have also shown cooperation in areas such as 5G, then undersea cables, telecom and network security. And then if you remember, many Indian youth are being placed in Japan as interns under technical intern training program. It is part of India's initiative towards developing skilled workers where they get to learn skills in Japan. So basically, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's visit to India was to follow up on updates regarding all these issues. Then on 19th March, the Austrian Foreign Minister Alexander Schallenberg had also visited India. Now what you have to understand is that Austria is part of the European Union. Again, even this was the first official visit of the Austrian foreign minister to India. But the interesting part is, his visit to India comes at a time when Russia-Ukraine war is going on. And the entire European Union, along with the United States, have waged an economic war against Russia. That means, being part of the European Union, it is highly unlikely that Austria is going to act independently. However, if you look at the bilateral relation between Austria and India, it is based on political, economic, cultural and academic interests. Many Indian students go to Austria for pursuing higher studies. But anyhow, what was more interesting about his visit was that the Austrian foreign minister made a statement during his visit to India. He said, "Putin miscalculated his invasion of Ukraine." It was unnecessary for him to say that during his visit to India. He could have said it back at his home. But then he chose to say it in India. Why? Simply because India abstained from the UNSC voting against Russia. Ever since India did that, United States is constantly putting pressure and giving indirect threats to India. And then Austria is part of European Union, so Austria has to comply with whatever United States and European Union's collective policy will be against Russia. So what I feel is that the Austrian foreign minister's visit to India was actually aimed towards politely convincing India to take the side of the West. And just to touch upon the fact that, if you believe that Putin miscalculated his attack on Ukraine, then that is also wrong. I'll tell you why. Because Vladimir Putin has more experience being the head of a state than any other president or PM of any country. Plus, you also have to understand that Russians are not dumb. They have estimated in advance what could possibly go wrong and what the Western countries can collectively do. If I have to point out one thing that the Russian did not expect, that would be how the narrative of this war would play out on social media. The Western countries were pretty much successful in creating a narrative on social media, and they also banned the Russian media outlets. So basically, it was a one-way narrative of the Ukraine crisis that we all were forced to consume. So I feel this is where the Russian fell back. Although I also believe that Russians don't care about what everyone thinks about them. That is why you must have seen that when this war was going on, Zelensky, the US president, some European leaders, they were giving media statements every single day. But if you look at Vladimir Putin, he was least bothered. He gave zero justification because he knew that the so-called freedom of speech on social media is going to be one-sided business of the West. Then on 10th March, the Canadian Trade Minister, Mary Enge, came to India. If you remember, the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, he visited India in 2018. And that was not at all a good visit. It turned out to be a disaster because lately he has been giving some unapologetic support and statement to extremists and separatist groups that have anti-Indian views. And if you search on the internet, you will find many pictures of Justin Trudeau and a person named Jaspal Athwal, who is a Sikh extremist. And he has been convicted of attempted murder and his affiliation with the terror groups. And then if you remember, last year in 2021, Justin Trudeau supported the farmers' protest in India and made many unwanted statements regarding India's internal issues. But then karma has its own way of catching up. In February this year, he had to face aggression from Canadian truck protesters. As a result, he had to go into hiding and move himself and his family to a secret location. So that is where the Canadian Prime Minister lost his credential, and we don't have to take him seriously. So anyhow, after his disaster visit to India in 2018, this is the first time that the Canadian Trade Minister Mary Enge came to India. The main purpose behind her visit was to convince India for lifting fumigation penalties on Canadian pulse shipments. Whenever a country imports or exports agricultural material or any other products that emits fumes in the form of gas and vapor, they have to issue fumigation certificate. For example, onions have fumes that make you cry and have strong smell. Similarly, even pulses generate fumes if not stored and packed properly. So if you see, India is a key importer of pulses from Canada. In spite of being self-reliant, India imports huge percentage of pulses from abroad. That's a whole different story altogether why India does that. What you need to understand is that when India imports Canadian pulses, there was an issue that was going on for several years now. It was regarding sanitary and phytosanitary measures, meaning Canada never used to pay much attention to the hygiene part while sending shipments to India. Because Canada is a cold country and they never had any problem with respect to storage. So they used to ship the pulses to India without putting any extra care on the hygiene part. When the shipments used to arrive in India, many of the pulses used to degrade. So what India used to do was, it used to impose fumigation penalties on the Canadian pulses. Now any sort of penalty would have an effect on the Canadian pulse industry. So to sort out that issue, the Canadian Trade Minister came to India. Then on 14 February, Saudi General Fahad Al-Mutayr visited India. The aim of his visit was to strengthen bilateral defense cooperation between India and Saudi Arabia. There are two elements that shapes the relationship between India and Saudi Arabia. One is with respect to economic prosperity and the other one is dealing with terrorism. This is the first visit by a serving Royal Saudi Land Forces commander to India. I don't know whether you know this, officers from both Royal Saudi Armed Forces and the Indian Armed Forces are undergoing training in the various military institutes of two countries. New areas of cooperation are being mutually identified to include intelligence sharing, counterterrorism, artificial intelligence and cybersecurity. Both countries' bilateral defense ties are growing and both the countries are an important regional powers. So that was the whole gist behind the visit of Saudi General to India. Then on 9th February, the Australian Minister of Trade and Tourism, Dan Tehan, visited India. The main reason for his visit was to have a discussion and negotiation on a free trade agreement with India. Both the countries are also working on a comprehensive economic cooperation agreement. What you have to understand between India and Australia is that India imports more from Australia than it exports. In the financial year 2021, India exported goods to Australia worth $4 billion, while imported goods worth $8 billion. So India imports more from Australia than what it exports. And the goods that India imports includes coal, copper ores, gold, vegetables, wool, fruits and lentils. So naturally, a free trade agreement with India will benefit the Australian businesses, farmers, workers, and it will create new job opportunities in Australia. You also know that for Indian students, Australia is a premium destination for tourism as well as education. Free trade agreements are supposed to be a landmark deal for any country. It includes reduction as well as elimination of tariffs or any kind of import-export taxes. And because of that, foreign direct investment will increase. So there are many such benefits. I'll list few of the benefits in this slide. Pause the video and have a look at it. So anyhow, the visit of Australian Trade Minister to India was basically to discuss free trade agreement with India. because Australia looks at India as world's largest and fastest developing economy. And then in the month of January, German admiral along with a German naval ship entered the Indian waters. Now you have to understand that if a serving German admiral visits India, that too in a German naval ship, this is an indication that there are some talks going on between India and Germany related to defense and maritime security. See, you have to understand that lately many of the Western countries, when I say Western countries, it includes the United States as well as some European countries, they are showing interest in the Indo-Pacific region. If you remember, France started talking to India about Indo-Pacific policy in 2020. And now Germany. America has already shown interest in the Indo-Pacific region with the formation of Quad. So every country is forming its own Indo-Pacific policy and they are looking at India as a key partner in the Indo-Pacific strategic framework. And finally, in January 2022, United Kingdom's Secretary of International Trade visited India. Even her visit to India was on the similar note of that of the Australian Trade Minister. Even Britain wants free trade agreement with India. So you see, almost every country in this world wants something from India. And that is a good thing for India because that is how bilateral relations are formed and that is how bilateral relations turn into strategic relations. So if you see Russia, UK, US, China, Japan, Canada, Austria, even the Israeli Prime Minister was supposed to visit India, but he couldn't, and he will be visiting India in the coming month or so. So anyhow, these are some big shot countries. If you look at the big five veto countries, almost every country's representative or high-level minister has visited India in the last 1 month. And that too, these veto countries' representatives' visit to India comes at a time when there is a war going on. So the point of this video is, in the middle of the Russia-Ukraine war, why is it that top government officials of important countries in the world have visited India? What could be the reason behind it? See, if I have to give this answer in one sentence, that would be, India is now becoming the center point of world politics. In other words, India's foreign policy, I should say India's matured foreign policy is the main reason which is compelling these big shot countries to bring India onto the discussion table. And by the way, if you look at all the foreign diplomatic visits, only United States and China had an unofficial visit, meaning their visit to India was not planned. They arrived unofficially. And I will also tell you the reason behind their unofficial visit in a while. Anyhow, as I was saying, India is now becoming the center point of world politics. In fact, if you remember in the first week of March, when the Russia-Ukraine war was at its highest intensity, everyone from Russia, United States, European countries and Ukraine, they all individually approached India. And if you remember, India abstained from UNSC voting against Russia. And the opposite side, which consisted of US, European countries and Ukraine, they were continuously pestering India to be on this side. But India kept saying one thing and one thing only, let Ukraine and Russia sort it out on their own. And this statement of India was not appreciated and liked by the Western countries. That is why they kept saying things like, India is on the wrong side of history. Basically, European Union and the United States, they were collectively putting pressure on India to pick a side. And on the other hand, Russia applauded India for having an independent opinion of the whole event and even appreciated the fact that India stood away from this matter. So ultimately, you will see that India during this Russia-Ukraine war maintained its status quo of being neutral. Neither it trembled because of the Western pressure and nor India made any irresponsible statement about its friendship with Russia. And if you see, this version of Indian diplomacy is something that is making United States uncomfortable about India. That is why when the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited India on 31st March, United States on the other hand immediately sent its Deputy National Security Advisor Daleep Singh to India. It was an unofficial visit. And the reason behind that is pretty simple. Because United States knew that the Russian Foreign Minister would be visiting India. So the US thought, why don't I send my man to India? And they even chose someone of Indian origin. It cannot be a coincidence, you have to understand that. And if you read his statement, he said, Russia will not come to India's defense if China violates LSE. Now the point here is not to argue whether how much this statement makes sense. What you have to understand is that this kind of statement is an attempt by the United States to create a wedge between any kind of future trilateral relationship between India, Russia and China. I'm not confirming about any kind of such trilateral relationship. What I'm trying to say is that suppose tomorrow, if at all these three countries, that is India, Russia, China, they do come up with some sort of mutual agreement, then United States is playing its card in advance to not allow such kind of alliances to develop. In Hindi, we call it food dalna ya fir desho ke beech takrav paida karna. Ye America ki bahut purani technique hai. This is an old tactic of United States. But then for understanding's sake, let's assume that United States is trying to help India by warning against Chinese aggression. Let's assume for a minute that United States is trying to help India and that is why they made this statement. Now the question is, on what basis United States made this statement? I'll tell you why they said it. due to Russia-Ukraine war. As you may know, Russia is the only country in the world that has received the highest number of sanctions. And all these sanctions are from the Western countries and their allies. So naturally, the whole point behind sanction is to economically isolate a particular country, so that with time that country's economy collapses and perhaps that would lead to a regime change. Now, a few days back, you must have seen in the news that the United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken had officially said they are not planning for any kind of regime change in Russia. Always remember, whenever any powerful country says something openly in public, they actually mean the opposite. If you see, this is quite funny. The whole point of putting so many sanctions on one single country is to make its economy suffer, so that it has a compounding effect on the country's citizen. And as you know, when citizens of a particular country suffer, they will naturally revolt against their own government, so that is how sanctions are designed. I have made a video on this topic. It's called How to Not Be a Victim of Western Sanctions. I'll put the link of that video in the top right corner. Watch that and you will get an idea as to what I'm talking about. If you look at the statement of the United States, it is quite funny because if United States has no strategy of regime change in Russia, then what do you think they want? United States government's biggest fear is Vladimir Putin. If US doesn't want this man to be the leader of Russia, then what else does United States want? And now if you look at the statement of the President of United States, Joe Biden, during his Poland visit, he said, Vladimir Putin cannot remain in power. And both these statements were said on the same day. So the statement of the United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken was actually meant for correcting Joe Biden's off-script remarks. Because during this entire Russia-Ukraine war, you have noticed that the US President has made a series of unscripted remarks that has actually increased the temperature of US-Russia relations to a boiling point. In other words, the United States has actually provoked Russia in many ways. In fact, today, whatever situation Ukraine is in right now, it is because of the United States. United States is the reason behind Ukraine's current situation. Today, Ukraine is called the Afghanistan of Europe. It is because of the Western countries' self-benefiting policies. Because they used Ukraine to provoke Russia, Russia and Ukraine could have easily sought out the matter. But then the Ukrainian president merged his interest with the West. Even Ukraine realized it very late that the West will not come for their help. That is why Zelensky even said that Ukraine is no longer interested in NATO membership. So it was all pre-planned last year in July 2021 when United States left Afghanistan and handed over the country to Taliban. It was pretty obvious. United States had to find another conflict zone in the world. Because United States simply cannot sit quiet. It needs to be a part of some conflict around the world. Because that is what is in the interest of the US weapon industry. Fast forward 6 months after the Afghanistan withdrawal, it was Ukraine. In fact, I said the same thing last year when I made the video on Afghanistan issue. So anyhow, the point is that it is United States' deep interest to remove Vladimir Putin as the leader of Russia. Although they will not officially admit it, but Joe Biden will let you know about it every now and then. So in the past 1 month, many high-profile leaders of major countries have visited India. And this is something United States is not happy about. That is why the Deputy National Security Advisor of United States made such a comment. He said Russia will not come to India's defense if China violates LSE. For a second, if you look at this statement, it will make you feel as if tomorrow United States will come to help India if at all China violates LSE. So these kind of statements by the United States is nothing but provocation and instigation. The United States is slowly understanding the fact that its dominance over the world, or you can say its hegemony, is slowly declining. There are many countries in the world who are not at all happy with the United States. It is just a matter of time when strong economies like India, China, Russia, if they together plan something and create their own Eastern powerful bloc, then believe me, many countries will eventually favor the Eastern bloc because they are fed up of the United States and the European countries. Now, I don't know whether you know this, United States is also not happy about the fact that India is importing Russian oil. United States has been constantly threatening India for obeying US sanctions over Russia. I have said this in my previous video as well, putting sanctions on a country is easy, but sanctions are as good as monitored. If a country cannot monitor the sanctions that they have put, then it is of no use. Because there are many ways of doing trade, there are many ways payments can be made. So sanctions are as good as how much they can be monitored. Similarly, for United States also, they have to monitor sanctions, only then it is going to be useful. That is why the US keeps threatening India for obeying US sanctions over Russia. So as I said, US is not happy that India is importing Russian oil. To which the Indian External Affairs Minister gave a befitting reply and called out the Western countries' hypocrisy. When this Russia-Ukraine war was going on, Europe was importing 15% more oil and gas from Russia. And by the way, one should not forget the fact that today the oil prices across the world is high because of United States. I have a video named How to Not Be a Victim of Western Sanctions. Watch that video. In that, I have explained in detail about how the United States is the reason behind today's rising fuel prices across the globe. In that video, I have explained everything step by step. So if today the fuel prices across the world is high because of United States policies, then don't you think every country has the right to do whatever that is best for the country and their people? That is why India is buying heavily discounted Russian oil. Because why should India suffer due to United States policies? So India is buying Russian oil unapologetically, and in return it is telling the United States that if you can match the discounts, then I will buy it from you as well. So basically, if you see, India is calling out the hypocrisy of the West, and at the same time it is also doing straightforward business with Russia by purchasing heavily discounted Russian oil. And at the same time it is also telling the United States that if you can match the discount, or in other words, if you can lower your fuel prices, then I will buy from you as well. So indirectly, India is telling politely to United States that instead of giving threats, you focus on your supply business and I will be your customer. There is an old saying in Hindi, Bhai bin hoi na preet, meaning there is no friendship without fear. Strength respects strength. India is not at all disrespecting the United States. But today, if India gives up to United States threats, then tomorrow the US will do it even more. See, it is very simple. United States and European countries, which are together called the West, they have animosity with Russia. And both Russia and the West, they are trying hard to get China and India on their side. The fact that the United States, UK, Russia and European Union, basically 4 out of big 5 veto countries, they are sending their delegation to India as well as talking to the Chinese officials, because the European Union is also talking to China via video conference. So what does all of this say? See, China is also veto power and India is not a veto power country. But still everyone is coming to India. That means India has arrived at the world stage. It has now become the center of world politics. And as I've already mentioned, Indian diplomacy is mature. Today the whole world is giving attention to India. However, if you see, India has its own playbook and it will stick to its own game plan. We have seen this in Russia-Ukraine war. India has its own analysis and understanding about Russia-Ukraine conflict. That is why India abstained from the UNSC voting against Russia. And I think even United States is slowly learning this about India. It's not going to be that easy for United States to convince India for anything. That is why every now and then United States keeps spitting controversial remarks or some unwanted statements which includes India. Last month in March, if you remember, the US intelligence said that the Indian government is not going to tolerate Pakistan's provocation. The point here is not whether India will tolerate or not. If India has to do something, it will do it without even asking anyone. But this statement of the United States will make you feel that it was unnecessary for the US to say this. Because even if India has an intention of something like that, US has clearly spilled the beans. And then now when the US Deputy National Security Advisor visited India unofficially, nobody called him. After arriving, all he did was make a press statement and said Russia will not come to India's defense if China violates LSE. So if you look at the language of United States, it's not a language that is coming from a friend. And that too, the United States could have sent their National Security Advisor Jack Sullivan. But instead, they sent the Deputy NSA, who also happens to be of Indian origin. This is called coercive diplomacy. Coercion is an attempt to get the other person change their behavior through threats, and that threat could be direct as well as indirect. And by the way, before talking to India, United States has done the same thing with China. United States held a 7-hour long meeting with China just to convince China, or rather threat China, to not help Russia. And then now, a couple of days back, the European Union has also pressurized China not to help Russia in any way. Otherwise, China will face consequences because Europe and United States are its biggest trade partners. So you see, the Western countries are trying hard to create a narrative against Russia, and they are desperate to bring every major economy on their side. And quite frankly, if you read the Western countries' statements carefully, you will see that they are not even requesting. They are doing coercive diplomacy. Actually, if you see, the Western countries don't have the habit of asking. They have always shown brute force. But now they are slowly realizing that their influence is slowly declining. China has never listened to United States. They don't even care about United States sanctions. They are immune to the Western sanctions to a great extent. That is why whenever United States puts sanctions on China, it hardly makes a difference to China. China over the years has made huge efforts to shield its economy from all these tricks. And then if you see, even India is standing firm against United States threats. Although India is not challenging the United States directly, but India is pushing back firmly against US threats. And then if you remember last month in March, Saudi Arabia and UAE leaders did not pick up Joe Biden's call. And then the US officials were also making a trip to Venezuela. If you all know, it is the United States sanctions against Venezuela that ruined the economy of Venezuela. Although many even say that socialism and corruption destroyed the Venezuelan economy, but then if you read about the whole issue, you will realize that the United States also played an important role in destroying the Venezuelan economy. And today, after the Russia-Ukraine war, US is making an attempt to reach out to the Venezuelan government. Why? Because of self-interest. US wants oil. Their policies caused the oil prices to go high, and that is also affecting the US domestic market. And then even Iran is fed up with the United States. You can sense that from the statement of the Iranian Supreme Leader. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has openly said that it is because of the US and other Western nations today we see so many conflicts and crises around the globe. Even he agrees that the present Ukraine war is also United States doing. And it is absolutely true. Here is a list of countries that were affected by the United States and Western countries' policies. So the point is that there are many countries in the world who are not at all happy with the United States and other Western countries. And everyone is looking for that one moment when there will be a huge shift in the global power. In other words, there will be a new world order. And then believe me, everyone is going to eventually join the new world order and the West will be out of the picture in no time. Russia has also said to India that if India needs anything, Russia is willing to give. And then you must have also heard that Russia and India is also developing new payment system that will be totally different and it will have no dependency on the dollar-based payment system. Because if you see today, everything in this world is dealt in dollars. In other words, the US dollar has a monopoly in this world. It is the world's strongest currency and every currency in this world is compared to dollar. And please don't think that the US dollar became the strongest currency just like that. It was a pre-planned decision back in 1940s during the end of World War II. 44 US allied countries met in Bretton Woods and they collectively chose the US dollar as a system to manage foreign exchange. You can read about this arrangement in the Bretton Woods Agreement. So this is how the US dollar became world's reserve currency. Now having made the US dollar as world's strongest currency, today if you see US uses its own currency, that is the US dollar, as a weapon by putting economic sanctions on other countries. This is called weaponization of dollar. Russia in 2019 shifted its reserves out of dollars and they started selling oil in non-dollar currencies. If you can create a system by which you can run your country's import and export without paying in dollars, then the US sanctions will not affect your economy. Look at this picture. You will notice that from 1999, the share of total export around the world was conducted majorly in either US dollar or euro. So you see how the Western countries maintain an economic leverage over any country in this world. When you put economic sanctions on a country, you are basically cutting the economic arteries of a country. And in this Russia-Ukraine war, we are witnessing how United States is weaponizing dollar. Without firing a single bullet, United States has put a large dent to the Russian economy. If today it is happening to Russia, tomorrow it can happen to anyone. Even India is aware of it. India has been facing threats from the US since the 90s. So if you see, US and the Western countries' sanctions are an attempt to show Russia that how much Russia needs to obey and listen to the Western market and government to survive. But then if you see, Vladimir Putin is not a submissive person. So if you see, in all practicality, it is a necessity to have an alternative foreign payment system that has no dependency on the US dollar whatsoever. So keeping that in mind, Russia, who is today the victim of world's largest number of sanctions, is coming up with its own international payment system, wherein anyone who wants to do business with Russia will have to pay Russia in Russian ruble instead of the US dollar. So for example, if Russia and India does business, then India has to pay Russia in ruble and not in the US dollar. Similarly, if China and Russia do business, then China has to pay ruble to Russia. See, the most important thing that you have to understand is that the Russian economy is a self-sufficient economy. More than import, it exports to the world. If you see India, India imports more than it exports. For India, it may take a little more time to be self-reliant. However, for Russia, it is not difficult to be self-reliant. I'm not saying that Russia can be completely self-reliant. Obviously, even Russia needs trading partners. And that is why Russia has found partners in countries like China, India, some Southeast Asian and few Middle Eastern countries. So Russia exports more, that means the world depends on Russia more. So what the Russian government is doing, if you have heard in the news, the Russian government is buying and accumulating a lot of gold locally. They are not buying gold from other countries, they are accumulating and buying gold from their own domestic market and also increasing production in their own country. Now the question is, why are they doing that? So always remember, any government or any country's financial institution in this world operates their economy with the help of two instruments. One is the currency and the other one is gold, that is yellow precious metal. After currency, gold is of value. Because we as society and governments together collectively has given this value to gold to be the next most important financial instrument after currency. So right now you will see that the prices of gold in the international market is rising and it is due to the Russia-Ukraine war. But then if you look at the prices of gold inside Russia, it is falling. And that is why the Russian Central Bank is buying a lot of gold domestically. Plus it is not something new for Russia, they are doing it since 2010. Now the next question is, what will Russia do with so much of gold? Do you think Russia can sell its gold to anyone under sanctions? So what the Russian government is planning to do is, they are going to link the value of their currency, that is the ruble, with the value of gold. Since gold is a commodity which is trusted by almost everyone on this planet, that means if Russia has huge reserve of gold, just like the United States, Russia will be able to tell to its customer to pay in Russian ruble whenever they buy oil, weapons or any other commodity from Russia. Because any country who will do business with Russia will have to trust on the fact that Russia has a huge pile of gold. That means if tomorrow Russia is unable to make any payment, then it can give gold to its customers. And gold is something that can be used by any country anywhere in this world. And tomorrow if the United States decides to destroy the value of gold, then even their own gold reserve will also be of no use. So if Russia has a huge reserve of gold, then anyone who does business with Russia will have a trust on the Russian currency because it is being backed by gold. Have a look at this chart, you will see that from here the ruble started falling, in other words the Russian currency started declining because of the Western sanctions. But then slowly it is getting back. And the reason is very simple, because the Russian government is accumulating a lot of gold. And they are linking the gold value with their currency so that the demand of the Russian ruble becomes strong. In my previous video also I have said this, if Russia, India, China can come together, they can easily sustain and survive within their own region. And looking at these three countries, few Middle East and few Southeast Asian countries can also join. So together they can turn out to be a powerful bloc, and they can eventually turn out to be a powerful force against the Western countries. So Russia is selling oil at a very cheap price to India, as low as $35 per barrel. India has also bought huge quantity of Russian oil. They are also doing talks on various other things. United States, on the other hand, is aware of this kind of future tri-alliance between Russia, China and India. And by the way, if you look at BRICS, I think it is the only alliance that can give a tough competition to NATO. So it is very important for the member countries of BRICS to keep it all together, even if there are mutual differences. Russia can turn out to be that central character that can bring everyone together. But anyhow, the main point of this video is to tell you how India is now arriving at the center stage of world politics. Everyone seems to be coming to India and pursuing India for their own political and economical interests. However, in the broad spectrum of diplomacy, there are few glimpses of truth and real friendship that India has witnessed, and that has helped India to sustain many difficult times in the past. So India has to be very careful about its move. As of now for India, it has to play the role of being a balanced nation because we are witnessing a shift in the new world order. And it is quite funny, if you look at the United States, they want India to be on their side. That is why they are putting pressure as well as giving indirect threats to India. Clearly the American frustration as well as desperation is visible. But then on the other side, Russia is praising India for not judging the war in one-sided way. So if you look at it in a personal sense, America is saying you have no other choice but to be on my side and support my narrative. But then Russia is saying you don't have to be at anyone's side. Just be neutral and don't judge this conflict in a one-sided way. And then looking at the past history of United States and the European countries, what they have done to many countries in this world, in the name of democracy, human rights, women rights and whatnot, one doesn't need to be a political pundit to understand what's actually going on. I hope you found this video informative. Thank you for watching it.